The first reading this morning is from a most remarkable book called It's Really All About God, Reflections of a Muslim Atheist Jewish Christian. You read it right in the order of service. Written 2 years ago by a radical Croatian Seventh-day Adventist, Pastor Samir Selmanovic, who is co-leader of Faith House Manhattan, an interfaith community of communities that brings together forward-looking Christians, Muslims, Jews, and atheists, and others who seek to thrive interdependently.
Our religions, by which I mean any systems of meaning, are the caretakers of the spiritual environment of the world. We have come to the place where millions of people say, religion? No thanks. I'd rather be spiritual than religious. But our departure from religion is at the very same time a departure from its rich treasury of community, insight, art, practiced, organized action, and hard lessons. Life is so wide and so deep that our religions are barely adequate to help us take it in. This book is an attempt to step above, under, or sideways from our religions and look at them not merely as their adherents, but as human beings. Some of my Muslim, atheist, Jewish, and Christian friends understand the subtitle of this book, Reflections of a Muslim, Atheist, Jewish, Christian, as describing a person who embraces four religious traditions at once. I am not sure such a person exists. But the concept makes sense to them nevertheless. Hyphenated being is becoming a reality for many people who have found truth, beauty, and justice, in other words, life, in more than one scripture, tradition, or practice. In their experience, being asked to make up their mind and renounce one religion in order to embrace another would be akin to being forced to choose one parent and deny the other, or to rely on one sense at the expense of the others. The way religions contradict or collide with one another is not nearly as important to them as the way they complement and illuminate one another. At different times in my life, I have belonged to Muslim, atheist, and Christian camps. In every one, I was certain. I believed that whichever we I was part of, were right. And for us to be right, I thought, others had to be wrong. Now I am looking for a better way to stand on the ground of my beloved religion. I decided to let some uncertainty enter my life. Questioning my own certainties has been lonely. Uncertainty hurts. Yet it is that uncertainty which has been saving my life.
The second reading consists of lines from a poem by Diana Dare Hovhannessian, an American poet of Armenian ancestry. It's called Two Voices.
In what language do I pray? Do I meditate in language? In what language am I trying to speak when I wake from dreams? Do I think of myself as an American or simply as a woman when I wake? Do I think of myself in my clothes getting wet walking in the rain? In a storm, do I think of lightning striking? Do I think of my grandfather telling about the election at the time of Teddy Roosevelt's third party, and riding with Woodrow Wilson in the Main Street Parade in Worcester? Or do I think of my grandmother at Ellis Island, or as an orphan in an Armenian village? Or at a black stove in Worcester baking blueberry pie for my grandfather, who preferred food he had grown to like, in a lonely Milltown cafeteria while he studied for night school? Do I think of them as Armenians, or as tellers of 1,001 wonderful tales in 2 languages? Do I think of myself as hyphenated? No. Most of the time, even as you, I forget labels, unless you cut me. Then I look at the blood. It speaks in Armenian.
Quite a number of people in the last 3 or 4 weeks have been talking to me about the many days of rain this decidedly unusual spring has brought us. It's gotten some folks down, plain and simple, the gray, the constant rain. They cheer up when, like today, the sunlight breaks through, or sometimes during the rainy days, late in the afternoon, the sun would break through. But still, they found themselves articulating that they felt kind of droopy in the gray. And I certainly have felt that way myself sometimes. But I've also noticed that this external phenomena, namely the unusual weather, has served as a diving board into temporary community. My neighbors in my building have all been talking about the weather with each other in the parking lot, in the lobby where we get our mail. We've been talking a lot for the first time in a long time. We're not just saying hello or waving like we usually do, but we're stopping and we're connecting and we're sharing more than simple complaints about the rain. Same thing happened when I was in Oakland, California for the great quake of 1989, the so-called Loma Prieta quake, when the electric power is off from the entire city, every signal light, every light bulb in every building for 3 days, when the highways not far from you have collapsed and killed people, and the night is truly night. All of our neighbors huddled together. We climbed up onto the roof of our building and slept there together, all side by side, comforting each other, talking to each other, as we bonded in ways we never had before. I'm sure the people in New Orleans after the hurricane and in the southern states all decimated by the recent tornadoes this year are filled with thousands of such externally generated temporary communities. But as our children's book this morning said so beautifully, the rain, however unusual its pattern this year, eventually ends, and the quiet sun comes out from behind the clouds. Communities started by external stimulus come to their end, probably by middle of July. My neighbors and I will be just waving again. Hello. I note this reality of temporary community whenever I conduct a wedding or sometimes a memorial service. I speak of a temporary community never before gathered, which is what a wedding party is, or people gathered to mourn. It's unique. It's deeply intimate for a while. It's organized by an invitation in the mail or a note in the paper, something external, and then it's no more. But other communities are shaped by inner realities, not something external. I am part of many communities that are based on something inside of me, something measurable and physical, perhaps, my heritage, my ethnicity, genetically translated into me through the act of my birth, my gender, maybe, my sexuality, my age, my particular skill set, my religious affirmations. I am part of a Unitarian Universalist community. And yes, my grieving. I've often heard said, and I think this makes great sense, that the community of grievers is the largest community in the world, always, at every time, in every generation. But I belong to many other communities as well, many of which are smaller. Like our Armenian-American poet puts it, do I think of myself as an American when I wake up? And she says, or simply as a woman. Two different communities. Then she asks, do I think of myself as hyphenated? Her answer is poignant. No. No, I don't. Most of the time, even as you, I forget labels. Unless you cut me. Then I look at the blood. And it speaks in Armenian. Powerful words, probably based on history. There was a lot of bloodshed in Armenia at the turn of the century. But I think she's saying that all communities we belong to are associated with the word identity as well. Who are we? We're part of a community that shares an identity. And she is saying that some communities that she belongs to, some identity she claims, are more basic, central, and rooted than others. I suppose that's true for me, too. I may not live in my present building with my present neighbors, but I'll always be an Italian-American. Pure, isolated communities that do not overlap much are actually very rare. There are religious groups, certainly, that think that everyone outside their little group is damned. But even there are other unnamed communities in the midst of that little sour community. Communities of women, communities of men, for example, communities of children, which are part and which shape the larger community. In this congregation, the theological survey that was taken by the search committee before I was called here to be senior minister showed and revealed a wide variety of beliefs religiously and spiritually. But by far, when I looked at that survey, I noted that the largest percentage of folks claim for themselves the title eclectic. They were eclectic. They believed a bit of this and a bit of that. To be eclectic means that you choose what you think is the best parts of a variety of traditions and sources. And in our Unitarian Universalist community, that's perfectly okay. You can meditate like a Buddhist on Tuesday night. You can chant in Hebrew at the Seder during the spring. You can rejoice in a humanistic critique of scriptures of any religion. And you don't have to be confused. It all flows together. It's eclectic. Nor, I want to hasten to add, if you do this with care, honesty, sincerity, and skill, are you doing something that can be fairly derided as merely shallow or just dabbling? Some of the deepest people that I have met are eclectic in their spiritual approach and not at all shallow. They're deep indeed. However, I have to admit that most religious groups are eclectic in practice. I practice yoga when I was a Catholic, yoga with its spiritual dimensions, not just the postures, the asanas. I have Jubu friends, that is, Jews who meditate in a Buddhist fashion, and that word has come to be a real word now in English, a Jubu. And I know Methodists who believe in reincarnation. And I know Lutherans who don't really believe in God, at least in the omnipotent sense of that term. Unitarian Universalists like us are different only in that we name the eclectic identities and communities among us and encourage such diversity openly as one of our strengths, as our mission statement puts it so elegantly. But this morning I want to offer my praise to a very interesting and new form of overlapping communities and identity formation. Samir Samanovich's Faith House in Manhattan is a place where men and women with fully Christian, fully Jewish, fully atheist, or fully Muslim identities choose to live side by side in community. They are not being eclectic. In order to thrive and deepen in their own communities of specific identity, they relate with compassion, wisdom, and kindness to people who believe not eclectically, but actually differently from them. Reverend Samanovich is actually a Seventh-day Adventist, and he remains one. But he shares his living quarters in community with atheists and people who face Mecca when they pray. This is very different from what we do, to be sure. But I want to hold it up as something that stands by our side and offers something extraordinary to the world. It may serve as a new model alongside ours, which could make a difference in our fractured world, where we are competitive and mutually hostile in the areas of the spirit as well as in politics. But what's important today is to mention that you don't have to go to Manhattan to participate in such a community or to know about such a community. Do you know about our own congregations, interfaith youth group, the one that we participate in? Do you know about Unitarian Universalists, Muslims, Jews, Presbyterians, all working together to learn and to do service projects? The model of individuals being actively part of several overlapping communities for the common good has already begun close at hand. Those of you who get the UU World, some of you who are members of the congregation get this in the mail. The whole center section of this issue is about us here in Columbus, about this interfaith group. Lori and Samantha Nandiol, as well as Susan and Allegra Rossigno, are working with this group. And I thank them, all four of them, with great gratitude, and I'm extremely proud of their work. These two communities of communities are not formed by outside forces, like rain, or like an earthquake, or a wedding invitation. These two communities of communities, are formed from inner convictions, deep and abiding. Convictions that fighting each other over religion, over identity, over theology, or over anything ideological does no one any good ever. And that it's time for a change of affairs if the world is to go forward. And I personally think and live my life believing that such change is possible. As cynical as I am, I believe that such change is possible. After all, as our children's story said, the rain does come to an end eventually. It does. It may start up again, sure, I understand that. Nothing lasts forever, Buddha said. He was right. But even peace and goodwill will end, which is why that's such an amazing statement. Still, the warfare between religious views will end, at least in some communities here on this earth, where people don't have to be wrong so that others can be right. And some of us, now that we are all on the other side of the rapture, may actually live to see such a reality in our own lives. It's already begun.